whether it's a salad, a hamburger, or that egg sandwich you eat every morning, the way your meal gets made has an impact. The What You're Eating podcast wants to help you understand how your food gets to your plate. Join host Jerusha Klemper as she uncovers the problems with the industrial food system and how you can overcome them. From practical conversations with farmers and chefs to discussions with policy experts on the barriers to sustainability, Food Prints podcast doesn't just cover what you're eating. It covers everything from the why to the how. Listen and subscribe to What You're Eating at foodprint.org/whatyoureeating or wherever you get your podcasts.
There are many different paths you can take, but there's only one, Road to Atlanta.
The high drive deep out to left field. He clubbed it. Brady twisting and turning, looking up and giving up. It's a home run for Dansby Swanson. Flair out towards shallow right. That's big trouble. Albies going back. He dives and he makes the catch. What a play, Ozzie Albies. Swanson is headed for three. He'll try for it inside the Parker. Relay throw comes toward the plate. He'll score standing, and it's his second inside the park home run of the season.
This is your weekly podcast dedicated to the Atlanta Braves farm system. Follow the show on Twitter at @Road2Atlanta. Now, hit the road with your hosts, Eric Cole, Gaurav Vidak, and Garrett Spang.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Road to Atlanta, a podcast devoted solely to the Braves farm system and Braves prospects. I am one of your hosts, Eric Cole. You may recognize me from my work over on Talking Chop or for my random tweets and diatribes over on Twitter at Leprechaun with a K. Joining me are the usual suspects this week. We have Matt Powers. You can find him on Twitter at MattPowers31, who's been spearheading our draft coverage as well as helping out on the minor league side for quite some time. And Gaurav Vidak, the curator of the Braves Reddit Twitter account, as well as his own personal account at GVDAC. Gentlemen, how are we doing this evening?
I'm great. I just got back in from Atlanta and seeing a couple of these prospects in both Rome and Gwinnett, as well as some of the guys in Atlanta.
Yeah, we're actually going
to... I'm great.
Oh. No, go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was going to say I'm great because I got a little cup of whiskey, so I'm feeling good right now.
Oh, God. This is the
now let me talk about something that's been grinding my gear.
Yeah, Road to Atlanta After Dark is about to happen. That was one of my favorite moments from the original Road to Atlanta, where I forgot to edit out like 10 minutes of us just like going on a diatribe and you know, I'm like, yeah, just leave it up, I guess. I mean, it's a little, can't unring the bell. The important part of this particular podcast that you're going to be listening to is going to be our interview with Ben Badler, where we talked about the international free agent market, a bunch of different topics. Ben was great. Don't forget to miss that. That's going to be about the last 40 to 45 minutes of the episode. But we do want to give everyone updates. First and foremost, my apologies on the podcast not happening last week. That was totally my fault, and I was still willing to record, but basically I was overruled by Gaurav. I had a family emergency come up. I had a family member that had to have emergency surgery, and while that surgery took place earlier in the week, there's a little bit of recovery and some setbacks and things like that I was just having to deal with. And you know, we just made the decision that it was probably best just to skip a week and then go back at it this week, where we can, you know, talk about the interview and then just get everyone caught back up that way. So it was totally my fault. I apologize in advance. These two guys were ready to go, but unfortunately I just had something come up, so we couldn't do the show last week. So again, I'm sorry. It will still be on every Thursdays. And in addition to enjoying the interview that you have at the end of this podcast, we also have an exciting guest for next week, because Jim Callis has agreed to come on. It's going to be a wide-ranging interview where we talk about Braves prospects, we talk about the draft, basically anything that comes up. Jim's great, and that'll be a lot of fun as well. So make sure that's something else for you to look forward to. Before we get into the interview with Ben, I wanted to kind of just get everyone up to speed on some of the like kind of the top performers and the big news items from the last week or so. Gaurav, I know you had a few guys you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, first and foremost is Sal Giardina just going off last week. I actually told him that I was going to give him a shout out. He has played really well, and I'm super happy to see him doing well.
I love Sal. He's so funny.
He's such a good guy.
Yeah.
I don't know why my voice got that high, but I really enjoy talking to him. I love the guy.
Yeah.
He's just a genuine person who – who, you know, okay, I'm not going to go on and on about him. I love him as a person. Yeah, we've seen some big weeks from some really notable players. And I think the one that probably sticks out the most and someone I wrote about yesterday or earlier, much earlier this morning is Austin Riley. And I think you guys, I'm pretty sure anyone that's listening in right now knows what exactly Austin Riley's been doing. Just like a quick glimpse over the last 10 days, he's got an absurd 1.639 OPS. He's got 6 doubles and 5 homers. That's 11 extra base hits. By the way, he's only had 15 hits over the past 10 days. So that's a pretty solid extra base hit percentage that he's sporting right now. You can't get the ball by him. He's just on fire. He hit that massive 492-foot home run yesterday, where basically everyone just stood there and was like, yeah, that's gone. Like, I'm sure you guys, yeah, like, you saw the catcher reaction as soon as that bat made contact. He's like, well, poop. Like, okay, I'll censor myself a little bit there.
Yeah, PG, PG. We'll try to keep it PG.
Yeah, and like the umpire kind of like stood up and was like, oh snap, like how far is that ball going? It was that big of a monster home run, and not to be outdone was Adam Duvall, who has, what, 7 home runs of his own over the past 10. He really wants back in Atlanta, you can tell, and I really hope it works out for him, especially with, like, the slight Ender injury. Like, Duvall, at his best, is a very, very valuable player on a major league team just because he's a really good defender as well, and he's got that power potential. Like, those two are straight up killing it. Another, I have two more I actually want to talk about. I know we only talked about 3. The third one would be Atlanta boy Trey Harris, who was showing out like crazy this year. You know, went to Missouri, put up some pretty solid numbers. I don't really consider him much of like a high ceiling prospect, but the guy is just sunshine and unicorns 24/7. He'll talk baseball to you all day, every day. He'll be the first person to take up a media interview. The guy is just one of those electric personalities that you can get by. And the fact that he is going nuts to start this season has been awesome. Over his last 10 games himself, he's got a 1.174 OPS. He's got, you know, 1 stolen base, which is still, I don't know if you guys noticed it, but it seems like the Braves as a whole are very less aggressive on the base pads in the minors than they have been in previous years. So, like, that 1 stolen base over 10 games is kind of significant. He's walking at a solid clip. He hasn't been striking out either. He's got 3 strikeouts in the last 10 games. We're talking 32 at-bats. That's crazy and impressive. And then the final guy is all of our love child. We're talking Izzy Wilson, who has got a 1.
Izzy.
He's slugging 750 over his last 10. You know he's going to walk. He always walks. But he's hitting for average right now. He's hitting 313 over 10 games. His OBP is 486. Of course, he's slugging at a 688 clip, which is, you know, comes all the way up to a 1.174 OPS. No, 1.171 OPS. I'm sorry. And I was reading Trey Harris's line. 313. Batting average, 750 slugging. So all of us want Izzy to be a huge thing, and I'm always going to overreact to small samples when it comes to him because I want him to become a thing so badly. But, you know, hopefully this is the building blocks for him. I don't know, but those are some of the major hitting prospects that seem to be really hitting their stride right now.
Yeah, I think we speak for all of us is that we really like the tools with Izzy since he was like a teenager in like the GCL have always been there, and it's just, you know, and he's a really nice guy too. We really want him to do well, and you know, it looks like there's nothing about what he's doing right now that, especially with his physical profile, it makes me think he can't do that, other than his track record, which is a non-zero consideration. But, you know, really love Izzy, and I'm glad that he's doing well. Matt, what about you? What about some guys that you have caught your eye over the last couple weeks?
Well, first, before we even get into it, and I didn't actually mention him before that I was going to talk about him, but Yusiel De La Cruz, since we last recorded, actually got promoted to Florida and had a great start. He went 6 innings, gave up 2 hits, 1 walk, 1 run, struck out 6. I mean, this guy looks like the guy that last year he started out as before he went down with the injury and never really returned the same way. this is the high ceiling guy that we've been on since probably July of 2017. And he looks healthy right now. He's got the results. Of course, then there's Nolan Kingham, who also just got promoted from Rome to Florida and did something remarkable yesterday. Was that yesterday?
I think it was yesterday.
But he threw a complete game shutout in 96 minutes. I mean, he gave up three hits, no runs, struck out five. It was his third start since being promoted to Florida. And he'd been a little hittable in his first two as he adjusted to the level of competition. Slightly with the defense as well because of the type of pitcher he is, which I'll get into in a minute. But, I mean, the stuff just really seems to be showing up. If you recall, I had him in the lower end of the top 100 prospects for the 2018 MLB draft.
Yeah, you were excited when the Braves picked him.
Very. He's a guy that can throw into the mid-90s, but he doesn't typically sit in that range, which sounds strange, but he's a sinker-slider type of pitcher who's going to induce a lot of ground balls, get a lot of ground ball contact, and part of why he's so hittable at times could also be less of a reflection on him as much as the defense that's going to be behind him. Because as a guy that's going to get a ton of ground balls, you need to have a good defense behind you to actually get to the balls. I mean, I'm not going to mention this name, but I was at a game last week and there was some very poor defense. I'm going to get into this guy next week, but just to get into what I'm talking about here, there were some lightly hit balls that resulted in a couple singles and a run being scored. With better defense, nothing would have actually scored. But defensive limitations happen, and it's no one's fault. It's just deceiving to a pitcher's line and their stats with the hits and runs allowed when they force a lot of ground balls. And Kingham is definitely the kind of guy who, when you put him with the current Atlanta Braves defense, could really have a great showing as a strong number four starter.
Yeah, so there's a couple guys that I want to talk about. First is Grov and Matt kind of hit the big names. William Contreras has also been hitting really well down in Florida. It's worth mentioning, batting well over 300 recently, hitting for some power, and he's kind of coming up in big spots too. We're still trying to get more and more reports on kind of how the catching is progressing, but the pitching down in Florida has actually been pretty good, which leads me to believe at the very least that Contreras isn't causing any problems in terms of play calling or anything like that. So those are all positive developments in terms of how, you know, overall how Contreras is doing. A couple other Fire Frogs, oddly enough, that have been performing really well. Riley Delgado, he just keeps hitting. It's like not zero power, but very little. He only has five extra base hits on the season with like three doubles and two triples. Doesn't have any real power to speak of, but the guy makes contact with the ball. He doesn't strike out. He's only struck out 10 times this year. And, you know, is batting .323, and he's a guy that at age 24, maybe he might need to be moved up at some point here soon, just to kind of see if that hit tool, especially without power, whether that's going to play at the higher levels, because he's a really interesting player, if for no other reason that he's defensively good enough. I think he's played over at third base, and I think he might have played some second too. I'm about to double check that to make sure. But he's a guy that, as a utility infielder who could do some damage at the plate, not in terms of power, but at least be able to get on base at a reasonable clip, draw some walks, maybe be one of those guys that isn't like the top of the order hitter, but as a guy who can give you really good value at that bottom third of the order, as he kind of gets to the major leagues. And he's seen time at second, third, and shortstop this year. And I really liked him as a shortstop last year. He spent most of his time at third, I think just because of like the positional necessity at Florida, but I think he could play all three positions really well. Another guy that I've been pushing him for a while now, ever since before the season started, and he's been performing exceedingly well, and I've been getting a lot of questions about, and I think you guys have too, is Hayden Deal. 30 innings pitched this year, 1.2 ERA, 27 strikeouts against 6 walks this year. Opposing batters are hitting 154 against him, and he required a little bit of research on my part, just because I saw him as a reliever. When he was at Rome, he only made a handful of starts for Rome, and I didn't get to see any of those live. So I didn't really get to see kind of what he was as a starter and what was making him so effective. So I asked around a little bit. We're talking about he's a left-hander, 24 years old, out of Presbyterian, North Carolina. He was a late round pick, and he is a guy that fastball sits in the low 90s. The four-seamer can maybe get up to 93 or 94, but what's made him so good, he's going to be naturally good against lefties, just kind of the way his arm slot works and how his pitches come in. He's just going to get that lefty-on-lefty matchup is going to always go well for him. But what's made him so good against righties is that, boys, we have a guy who has a cutter that is nasty. And we've seen pitchers, in the past that, like Corey Kluber's kind of the extreme example where he has the really good cutter. But we've seen guys that have been able to kind of figure out platoon splits in the past by having a really good cutter, and it sounds like that Hayden Deal actually has that, which is, makes him a really interesting starting pitching prospect, because one, like evaluating cutters like solely as like a, rather than a pitch ball, a fastball that has some like cutting action versus something that is thrown as a cutter, makes him a really interesting player. Before we move on to just some other news items before we kind of get into the interview with Ben, any other players that we're missing? I think that generally runs down the hotter guys.
I will say it's been nice to see the rebound from Jonathan Morales, who's played really well this year. I know we were kind of high on him his first year just because he was showing out with the bat, and we knew exactly what he was defensively. And then he started providing even more value by playing third base and first base and all this kind of stuff. But we knew he was a good catcher. But now his bat's starting to come around again. It's been really nice to see him just get back started. And if he becomes a thing again, that's another valuable catcher. And apparently the Braves are just amazing at creating or having really high producing catchers, which wasn't a thing that we had for a long time. And now we just can't stop creating them.
Yeah. And also Sean Newcomb has now gone two starts in a row in AAA. Total of 13 innings without a single walk. I happen to be at one of those starts. But for a guy that was sent down because he was struggling with his command to suddenly go and just not walk anyone over two starts is an encouraging sign. Obviously, we didn't really mention Austin Riley is just hitting the cover off the ball right now, and Adam Duvall as well.
Well, Gurov did kind of dig pretty deep. Gurov did dig pretty deep on Austin and Adam at the beginning. But what I think is going to be an interesting test, and I actually want to get your guys' guesses between Drew Waters and Christian Pache, who both continue to just keep hitting. That's just what they do. Neither one of them are really drawing walks, but they're both providing real value on the at the plate. If you have to pick between Waters and Pache, who ends up having the hot? No. I'm not making you pick which one you keep. Fear not. We get to keep both.
I don't like to decide either of them.
Oh, okay. Which one ends up with the higher OPS at AA this year?
I'll go Waters just because I believe in his bat more, but that's simply because the track record's there, and Pache has made like massive changes, and so that's literally the only reason I'm not picking. I'm going to go with Drew Waters.
Matt, what about you?
I'm going to have to agree.
I understand that pick, but I think that what's going to end up happening is that Pache is going to end up hitting for more power than Waters is this year at AA. This isn't a long-term projection. I still think that betting on Waters' bat over Pache's bat is the correct thing to do, but I think it's really close, and I actually think at AA just this year, I actually think that Pache is going to be the guy that ends up winning out the OPS battle, but it's worth mentioning. I think they're both going to have really good seasons because it's kind of crazy to me that both of them have been doing so well at AA this year so far.
You know who's an interesting name who, isn't – really producing traditionally because he's not hitting the ball particularly well, but when he is, he's doing extremely well with it, and that's Grayson Janista.
He's been really good.
He started off really, really bad, but then using MLB Farm, thank you Darren, God, this guy's incredible what he does every single time. Over his last 10 games, Grayson's got an 889 OPS, and while he's hitting 241, it's that 371 OBP and slugging 517. He's starting to provide a lot of value. I know Matt is in between how he evaluates his hit tool, but if the guy is going to provide value getting on base and slugging, which is something that we were scared about before was slugging, that's going to end up being a pretty solid draft pick by the Braves.
Yeah, and another guy who had a little bit of a hot streak before he kind of turned back into what he's been for the last couple of years is Connor Lean, who had a streak where he was, like, walking a ton, hitting a bunch of home runs.
Yeah.
But he's teased me before. I might have to see it more than a week to
he's got, like, last time I saw he had, like, an 800 OPS. I'm like, oh, my God, hell yeah.
He's, like, batting, like, 190.
Hitting, like, 145. Yeah.
I want him to be good so bad because talk about a guy with a ton of tools. Except for a hit tool, he just doesn't have one, and it's pretty rough. But at the same time, he's also a guy that, you know, if everything all of a sudden figured it out, he could like jump up in a hurry because he's actually a really good defensive outfielder too. A couple quick news items before we move on to the interview with Ben. CJ Alexander, sadly, he hadn't played since towards the first week of April with an elbow injury, and whenever we saw that come across, we were like, I don't know, being out this long. You wonder if maybe he's going to have Tommy John surgery. And then he announced on his Twitter that he was having to have surgery with James Andrews. And we're all like, oh, well, this is the Tommy John. And then later on he posted that he had to have his elbow cleaned out and scoped and kind of get some debris out of there. Should be back in – I think the timeline he said was 4 to 6 weeks, something like that. And that's really good to see that, you know, at the very least he's not going to miss the season. Because at his age, he's not a guy that you necessarily want to have missing a ton of time. And a name that I'm really happy to see come back, Matt Withrow has been activated from the disabled list, which it feels like he's been on it for a long, long time. And I'm hopeful that he assigned to Florida, so we'll see him down there first. But I really hope that he shows out because I really liked his arm. Was a guy that was uneven at times as a minor leaguer, but he's a guy that we really like as well. Are we missing any other big news items? I mean, we kind of covered the promotions of Jaceel and Kingham already. There was a little bit of roster shuffling that happened today, but I don't recall any big names being mentioned. Are we missing anything?
I think we are not.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Well, with that, guys, make sure that you guys are subscribing to the Talking Chop channel on iTunes, on whatever podcast platform that you prefer to use. Make sure you subscribe to that feed because not only do you get that podcast, but you also get this one. And it's two podcasts for one. We really enjoy doing it, and we really, really enjoy talking to Ben earlier when we talked about the international market and kind of what the Braves' place is in it right now, the changes that have been undergone. So make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Make sure you follow all these gentlemen, Matt Powers at 31 on Twitter for Matt, GVDAC on Twitter for Grav, and at Leprechaun with a K for me. Enjoy the interview with Ben, and we'll see you next time.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
All right, now we are here with one Ben Badler. Now, Ben was on the show during the first iteration of Road to Atlanta, and he decided to forego the trauma of that experience and actually come back and do the show with us again. So, everyone, please welcome Ben Badler. Ben, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, Eric. Thanks for having me on.
We're really glad to actually have you on because this is a topic of conversation that we get a lot of questions about, and I think Matt and Grav would agree that it's something that we don't have a lot of really good information on right now, simply because the club's been pretty quiet in terms of like acquiring players, and that they haven't really announced anything about like kind of how they're restructuring the international department and things like that. So we kind of have some questions, and I guess the question I have is, we all know that the Braves aren't going to be really big players in this next IFA class simply because they won't be able to sign anyone for any meaningful amount of money. They might sign some players here and there, but they're not going to be big names or anything like that. And in the next class, they're going to be hamstrung, although they can be a little bit more active. Where do you see these upcoming IFA classes like standing in terms of overall strength that, based on what we know right now? I mean, are the Braves really missing out on some really big pieces, or is this kind of like a weaker class or two coming up?
If in terms of the Braves class itself, or in terms of just the overall like 2019 class, you mean?
Just the overall 2019 class, simply because they won't be able to participate in it. Are they missing out on a lot, or are there some really good players that you're excited about?
I really like the 2019 class. I mean, I think if we, it's interesting to kind of look back now on some of the classes of the last 5 years. Like if you look at the 2014 signing class, you know, that was the year where the Yankees were kind of, they weren't the first team to go over their bonus pool. The Rays had already done it, but they were the first team that was like, all right, screw it. We're just going to spend a big boatload of money on players and just try to sign as many of the top guys as we can in a given class. And like almost no matter who they could have signed that year, at least among like the top high profile prospects, there just wasn't all that much talent, at least guys have really turned into legitimate prospects among the top guys in that class. And then you go ahead a year later, 2015, you've got Vladdy Jr., you've got Juan Soto, you've got Fernando Tatis Jr., you've got, Leody Taveras, Andrés Giménez. That year was a stacked international class. I think we're going to probably look at 2017 in a similar light. Last year was, I would say, just kind of a standard year. But I think 2019 is going to be a really good group. There's a lot of really talented players in the 2019 class in terms of the really top level guys, like a Jason Dominguez, Eric Pena, Byron Lara, those types of guys, but, Luis Rodriguez too, an outfielder out of Venezuela. But, I think there's just a lot of depth of talent too. Beyond that, it's kind of hard to say because, even the 2019 guys, we're talking about kids who are still 16, some of them are still 15 years old. So 2020, we're looking at kids who are 15 and even 14 years old. There's so much that can, I mean, these kids can change so much from the time they sign at 16 to the time they make their debut the next year. And, whether it's the DSL or the Gulf Coast League at 17 or sometimes 16 years old, but, especially going from, 14 to 16, there's just so much that can change about these players. So, I do think just the general trend overall of the international market and Latin American baseball in particular, just the talent keeps getting better and better every year. The kids are better prepared, better trained every year. So, overall, I think the trend is going up and, maybe too soon to say on the overall quality of the 2020 class, but I definitely think 2019 is going to be a strong group overall.
That's one of my favorite things about the international free agent market is like there's going to be the top guys, and then some of the names you mentioned from the 2015 class are obviously some of the best prospects in baseball right now or among the better players in baseball right now, period. And I like that, there's those types of guys that can really like kind of carry from their IFA gaze all the way through the minors, but there's also going to be like those guys who sign for basically nothing, come out of nowhere and, put on 50 pounds and, all of a sudden show off a tool set that we never thought they would have. The Braves have certainly been the recipients of some of that. They've also been kind of they've bought into some guys that, didn't work out. Matt actually had a question about one of the guys that the Braves ended up not being able to sign coming up.
So my question is actually about the guy that the Braves actually had the early agreement to sign and are now barred from signing, Robert Poisson. I know there was that point when he was 13, 14 years old that a lot of people considered him to be the top player in the 2019 class, but I'm aware that he's been passed out. What's happened to his stock since the Braves agreement was tossed, and where would you rank him today in the 2019 class?
I think his status, I think the first time I saw Poisson was at a showcase in, for the Dominican Prospect League, which would have been like July 2017. So 2 years ago, which in international, covering international market years, that feels like 5 years ago, to me, but, I think since then his stock is probably just about the same. We talked to scouts who saw him at that time who there were certainly some scouts who thought he was the best player in the class and there's still some scouts who think that, other other scouts, I think, were a little bit lower on him. I think you still have to look at just the, you know, premium tools, premium athleticism that he has. Can't really overlook that, especially at a, you know, for a guy who's going to stick up the middle at shortstop. So, I haven't finalized the rankings yet, but he's definitely still considered to be one of the top prospects in the class overall.
Is there a sense now as to kind of, I guess what I'm trying to get at with this, because, I mean, obviously the early agreement is one of many things that got the Braves in trouble with the international market, but the early agreement with Pouasson was identified specifically as something that the MLB wanted to kind of rectify and stop. Are we still seeing a lot of those kind of handshake agreements in the wake of those sanctions, not with the Braves, obviously, but maybe with other teams? Or have you seen actually a decrease in that in terms of, like, you know, people being more overt about it?
So I think it wasn't when MLB punished the Braves, it wasn't so much about having an early agreement with Pouasson. I don't have it in front of me, but in the commissioner's statement on it, it wasn't so much about them having an early agreement. They know that every club has agreements in place to sign players before July 2nd. I don't think that's any secret, and they, you know, aren't really doing anything with that, whether it's, you know, with players the Braves have agreed to earlier or other clubs having agreed to early agreements with other players. It's more, it was a combination of factors with the Braves, but, you know, the one specifically with Pouasson was not so much that they had an early agreement with him. It was that they had an agreement to sign him in a package deal. So they were going to sign Pouasson, but also just a big, you know, group of other players from the same trainer, in a package deal to sort of, sign Pouasson. And they were going to give Pouasson a big bonus anyway, but then they were going to throw a bunch of other money at other players who were, from the same program as well, which is what the Red Sox got punished for. The Red Sox did it a little bit differently, but they really hammered the Red Sox with penalties over that. I mean, they removed, I think it was 5 players from the Red Sox organization after that, including, I would say, at least their top 3 signings from that class, and then totally banned them from signing any players the following year. So when the Braves did what they did with Pouasson, in addition to some of the other things the commissioner's office mentioned, promising, I think it was, what was the phrase, extra contractual compensation to
I think that's what the phrase was.
Yeah, to G1, you know, to Bay, you know, and other, among other things that were going on there. So I don't think MLB, they show, you know, really no sign of caring about early deals, which are really only accelerating, at this point, at least in terms of, like, penalizing teams. I don't see any sign that's going to change. In Pouasson's case, it was, you know, that it was more about them having done a package deal to be able to sign or try to sign him in his case.
All right. Gaurav has a question about the aftermath of the Braves sanctions. Go ahead, bud.
That's almost like the perfect segue for me, actually. Following this whole scandal, the Braves pretty much cleaned house with the entire international scouting department. What exactly are you hearing about how they're rebuilding the staff? And are there any, like, notable names or positions that stand out to you?
It seems like it's kind of gone, I don't know that it was an immediate priority for them, just given that, all right, well, basically can't sign anybody. Looking forward to 2019 for a bonus above $10,000. But, you know, now with the way the market is accelerating, teams are kind of already, you know, I go to a showcase now in the Dominican Republic or Colombia, you know, where a lot of the Venezuelan showcases are now. And it's, more 2021 and 22 players than 2019 and 2020 kids. So the market's moving really fast. I do think they've started to, revamp their international, program. I know they've hired some more scouts on the ground there, but, it's kind of been a slower process for them to build that back up.
Well, that kind of leads me to my next question, which is, I mean, it makes sense to me that like, especially at the front office level or just kind of getting more scouts on the ground, like that would be something that they kind of take their time with simply because they're not, they don't need to be in that many places to, hunt down, like $10,000 or less guys. And they can kind of take their time with like picking personnel and things like that. But what I'm curious about is like the baseball academies that are in the Dominican or, the basis of operations where they kind of have these training programs in place, whether that be in Colombia, Venezuela, or the Dominican and others. Are those programs like still being like well attended and used, or is it something like have we seen changes at that level? Because a lot of these kids, at least that's my understanding, is that, a lot of these kids kind of grow up going to these same baseball academies, with whatever organization. And a lot of times that's where a lot of these sort of understandings begin to take place. And some of these are, and obviously some of these academies are like third party, run by specific trainers, not run by a specific organization. So in terms of those academies that are in place, that it seems like all organizations at this point have, even the Orioles, it seems like that they might actually be looking to actually expand to the international market after a long absence. So I guess, has anything on that level changed, even if we don't really know a lot about in terms of, the scouts and the front office personnel?
In terms of the participation for players in, the trainer programs themselves, or?
Yeah, in terms of like in those trainer programs, like at those, again, like the Braves academies that are in the Dominican, for example, because they're not going to be participants in these next two classes, are they seeing like just not much participation in those programs at all, or is it just kind of maybe shifted to the younger guys?
I think the Braves kind of have to, they're obviously in an unusual spot where for 2019 they can't sign anybody for more than $10,000. So I think a lot of their focus and energy right now is probably on the 2020 classes and beyond. I mean, they'll have some penalties for 2020 in terms of a reduced bonus pool, but you can still make a pretty good dent in that class, and they can still trade up for, for extra bonus pool money as well if they want. So, for 2020, obviously for 2019, their pool is zero.
They're not capped by that, like having their bonus pool, like they could trade up and get more if they wanted to.
Is you can trade for up to, they kind of shifted this year. I think it's for up to 60% of your bonus pool allocation. So they can trade up for more money in 2020, whereas in 2019, they have a bonus pool of $0. So, percentage of zero is, they're still stuck at zero, but any signings for $10,000 or less are exempt from the bonus pools for every club. So they can still sign guys for $10,000. So I'm sure they have guys who they're going to sign on, on July 2nd and after that, maybe when some of their prices come down for that $10,000 level, if it were me, and I imagine the Braves are probably going to take a similar tactic, that it'd probably be a heavy focus on arms, just because you can. I think if you look at position players signed for $10,000 or less, or even $100,000 or less out of Latin America in the last 5 years, you just look through our prospect handbook, there are very few position players who signed for less than $100,000, and certainly for even fewer who signed for $10,000 or less. Whereas pitchers, it's, you know, you throw a whole bunch of arms who are, you know, throwing, you know, 86 to 90 right now with the slurvy breaking ball and scattered strikes. you can get those kind of guys for, you know, $10,000, and then all of a sudden, boom, the guy adds, you know, 30, 40 pounds, starts throwing 97, 98, and you have a pretty legit prospect. So I think the Braves scouts on the ground, they're still going out to all these different programs throughout Dominican Republic, Venezuela, all of Latin America. You know, they can bring players for 2019 and 2020 into their team academy in the Dominican Republic to evaluate those players. But you know, when they're going out and seeing players, I think a lot of the focus for them right now is probably on the you know, the 2020, 21, even 2022 classes. But at the same time, I think a lot of other clubs right now are so focused on 2000, you know, really even 2021, 2022, just because of how aggressive the market has gotten, that it, you know, in some ways there could be even more potential bargains for players. I mean, it's a hard cap if a lot of teams have already kind of committed all of their bonus pool money for 2019. You're going to have a lot of kids come July 2nd, if not sooner, who are going to say, "Hey, look, I just want to sign at this point. I'll take $10,000." So it's kind of an unusual, sort of very unusual year for the Braves to be in, but there's some interesting ways I think they can approach 2019 tactically to try to squeeze a little bit of value out of a very, very limited situation that they're in.
That kind of leads us into the situation that they are in. I know Matt has a question about kind of some of the talent that the Braves end up losing in the sanctions. Go ahead, Matt.
So it's clear that the Braves lost a lot of pure talent during the international sanctions, but we haven't heard a lot about many of those players after they left, with the exception of Kevin Maiton's struggles with the Indians and Bay's legal issues with the Pirates. Are there any of these players still on your radar as real prospects going forward, or has their prospect value taken a step back from the time when they signed with the Braves?
Yeah, I think if you just look at the overall players that they signed in that class, it's kind of like what I talked about with the Yankees going over their bonus pool that year. It's just not the, it's kind of an underwhelming group overall, which, you know, Kevin Maiton, I think it's definitely safe to say that his stock is down from where it was when the Braves signed him. Certainly not giving up on him by any means, or any of these kids, just because they're still all so young. I mean, I think most of them are still, what, 18 or 19 years old at this point. But yeah, Yeffrey Del Rosario was one arm they lost. He's still a pretty interesting guy. Levon Soto, we'll see if he ever gets stronger or if he, you know, just that kind of ends up limiting him. I mean, he does put the bat to the ball. He's got a pretty good eye for the strike zone and very smooth, smooth hands and smooth actions at shortstop. But, you know, the strength is definitely a limiting factor. You know, Junior Severino, I think, is an interesting guy, in terms of the extra base hit power potential. You know, hasn't really shown that this year, but it's obviously, early on with a lot of defensive question marks on him. But, It's a lot of players to lose, but I don't know if you can really point to one guy right now and be like, wow, that's, you know, that would hurt the way if, you know, the Blue Jays have lost like a Vladdy Jr. or something at that same age.
That would have been pretty brutal. The prospect of losing, it almost makes us as kind of guys who cover the Braves and Braves fans feel a little bit better that the guys aren't doing as well, but you also wonder kind of that turmoil from that whole situation, kind of what if it played into that. And plus, you know, again, we still really liked those guys when they were Braves prospects, so I'm hopeful that, you know, they end up doing well for themselves, because ultimately, you know, they were doing what they thought was best for themselves, not to, you know, they're not villains in this story, I guess is the best way I know how to say it. Garab actually has a question, moving away from kind of the scandal era, I guess is the best way to describe it, about an international signing that's been getting a lot of attention lately.
Yeah, so you know how the Braves signed Ronald Acuna for like $100,000, Albies for $350,000. I think they signed Camargo for like $42,000. Another one that's performed quite well has been William Contreras, and I know the Braves signed him for like $10,000 or something like that. When he was a prospect, like, what was the general consensus about him, and what exactly are you hearing from him in terms of overall play, like his bat and catching wise?
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, that's like a good example of like a rare guy who did sign for a really small bonus, that kind of $10,000 level, and has turned into a really legitimate prospect. I mean, it's somewhat surprising. You would think that, you know, when you have those bloodlines of somebody who, you know, I forget if Wilson was a big leaguer at the time, or if he was just a prospect in the Cubs system, but you would think somebody with those bloodlines and also training in a pretty high profile program in Venezuela would get more attention, but he really just flew under the radar as an amateur player, not a obviously not a big bonus player, but ever since he signed, I mean, he's been very, very solid, very consistent. I think he's definitely one of the top catching prospects in baseball right now. I think he's got a chance to be a solid hitter. Hit for, you know, it's hard to put a number on home runs in terms of power, just with the baseballs right now, the difference
right
between the major league and the minor league ball, especially now that we're seeing that major league ball in AAA and just how bonkers the offensive levels have gotten. But yeah, I mean, just, I'm not saying he's, Acuna or Albies, but, I think that's a really, really great sign, obviously, by the Braves to be able to get him at that price. To me, he's one of the best catching prospects in the game right now.
Wow, that guy means business.
Just an amazing player.
No, not him, the sports photographer behind him.
What?
He has a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where he earns 5% annual percentage yield, so he's scoring big on and off the field. You might even say he's the MVB.
MVB?
The most valuable business.
Making your money work harder. That's how you business differently. Intuit QuickBooks. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
I just had a quick follow-up to that. How often do you see someone that does take like a $10,000 signing bonus and prove to be not only, you know, quality minor leaguer, but also can reach the major league level? Like, I know it's got to be super rare, but do you know of any examples off like possibly the top of your head? I know that's really a tough question. If you do know of anyone off the top of your head that did sign something that low and ended up having a really strong major league career?
So, I mean, I think if you look at like guys in the big leagues right now, you could probably find a bunch of them. But I mean, for me, I just wrote something, that went up a day or a couple of days ago on our website at Baseball America, just on, you know, the scouting process has changed so much over the last 10 years, even over the last 5 years, or even over the last like 12 months in Latin America, that the money has gotten so much bigger as well over the past 10 years, that, you know, we can look back at guys who signed in like 2009, 2010. Those guys are still like in their mid 20s, just kind of coming into their prime right now, like a Gregory Polanco, Gary Sanchez, Miguel Sano, those kind of guys. But even since then, there's so much that has changed. So I mean, if you just look at our prospect handbook right now, and you just look at the signing bonuses for international signings, and you break it down by position players and by pitchers, the position players, there's very few players at all in the handbook who signed for less than even $100,000. You know, there's some exceptions. You know, Vidal Brujan is one with the Rays, obviously. William Contreras, and you can say there's maybe some selection bias in there in terms of the younger guys who, before they get to maybe low A, the signing bonus, the bigger bonus guys, or maybe the higher profile guys who get more attention and would go in the prospect handbook, whereas if you're a lower dollar signing, you're probably more of like a lower dollar sleeper type and maybe takes a little bit longer to move up and kind of make your mark in, as a prospect. But really, by the time a player gets to low A, I don't think anybody's really looking at the signing bonus at that point. So for position players, very few players under, $100,000. Whereas for pitchers, it's like flip a coin, whether a guy signed for more or less than $100,000. So it was about a 50-50 split, at least the last time I looked at it a couple of years ago. So I think it just shows kind of the unpredictability of pitchers, and especially of projecting pitchers at that age. I mean, we see a guy like, Anderson Espinosa, who signed with the Red Sox, was the number one pitching prospect in his class, signed for, I think it was like $1.4 million, traded to the Padres. He's missed basically 2 years after Tommy John surgery. He's going to have another Tommy John surgery now. So, just keeping these arms healthy is such a big part of it. But then the other thing is, even the top pitching prospects, right now, if you throw like 93 as a 16-year-old kid coming out of the Dominican Republic or Venezuela, like that's an outstanding fastball for your age. Whereas if you top out at 93 at, the major league level, that's like maybe a 40 fastball. It's a below average fastball. You're probably going to be sitting around like, 89, 91, that kind of range. So there's just so much more projection involved for the stuff that needs to tick up for a pitching prospect when you're evaluating these kids at 15, 16 years old. I think we're seeing pitchers can really come out of anywhere and constantly, either exceed expectations or just surprise you. And I think teams generally spend their money, with that principle in mind. You see maybe a couple of arms every year, maybe a Starlin Castillo last year with the Phillies, a couple of arms every year who signed for $1 million plus, whereas it's about 20, 25 or so position players who are signing for seven-figure bonuses.
That mentioning these signings is interesting simply because, I think you're right in that on the arm side, it's almost more of a crapshoot just because of the volatility of pitchers in general. And the Braves haven't stood pat in the international free agent market. I think that's something that we do forget, is that they were able to sign guys in this last class. But again, because not from the sanctions, but just from the own restrictions of spending so much previously that they couldn't, again, they weren't in on the big name guys. And one thing that stood out to me, I tend to shy away from arms a little bit until I kind of see them in pro ball. But one name that stood out to me in your write-up on the Braves international class was Carlos Paiva, I believe is how you pronounce his name, because he seems like a guy that has some real tools as an outfield prospect, and I was wanting to know if you could tell us a little bit about him.
Yeah, Carlos Paiva. He's one of those guys where, Yeah, when you see his tools, the tools definitely stick out, and that's what you're banking on. I mean, sometimes you're getting a guy with more game polish and a little bit lighter in terms of the raw tools. Other times at especially at that price range, that kind of under $300,000 limit that the Braves are under that year, you're probably getting either kind of one end of the spectrum or the other. obviously with some exceptions, but in Paiva's case, it's a really, really athletic body, a lot of physical upside, like 6'2", 185, a lot of room to fill out, get stronger for those tools to potentially continue to tick up. He runs well. He's got a strong arm. He's got power. I think that power is probably going to continue to go up as he fills out, as he gets stronger. But he's definitely someone that leans more towards that emphasis on the tools and the raw tools. He's kind of still learning how to take it all into the game. I don't expect him to come out and hit 330 in the Dominican Summer League. Could be a bunch of strikeouts, or it could be somebody where guys who are athletic are able to make adjustments. He might be able to make those adjustments quickly, or it might be a case where, all right, he's got good tools, and the adjustments to take to the game and to kind of hit against live pitching never quite come along. So definitely interesting raw tool package to work with and to be able to add to the organization at given the restrictions that they were under last year.
Now, I think it might come as a shock to some of our listeners, but like, you're not just an international free agent market expert. I mean, you've been at Baseball America for a long time now, and you've been a part of the process for evaluating prospects, ranking them, and like talking about the systems in general. And Gaurav had a question for you just about kind of our system in general.
Yeah, I was actually joking around with Carlos the other day that I'm pretty sure you guys could put out like an MILB top like 4,000 prospects and rank every single one. Like, I am in awe of what you guys are able to put out every single day. It's truly incredible just to be able to talk to you and learn from you. That's a quick aside. I did have one question. Do you have any, of course, you're extremely well versed in pretty much every single farm system. Do you have any like non-traditional household names that you could potentially see not only make the Atlanta Braves, but have like some kind of meaningful impact? Just not necessarily like a top 30 prospect, but someone outside that kind of ranking.
Is there somebody who might come up this year and help the Braves, or?
Not necessarily this year, but within the next like 3 or 4, because I think we pretty much have the top 30 is pretty much the next 2 or 3 years, I want to say. But is there anyone outside of that could potentially make an impact in like 2020, 2021?
It's a good question. I mean, the tough thing with the Braves system right now is they're, I think their best players are really stacked toward the upper levels. I mean, when you have that, the signing penalty that, and the restrictions that they've been under, it's kind of, I think you see the lower levels of the farm system are, thinned out. And in some fairness, maybe you could say like Drew Waters and Christian Pache are two guys who, if they were at more age appropriate levels for them, could be in low A or high A and kind of be a little bit further away, but they've just moved so quickly through the system that they've kind of beaten that. One guy who I think is kind of interesting and kind of an arrow up type guy in terms of a deeper sleeper, Cesare Moreno. That's a kid that the Braves signed out of the Dominican Republic last year. Got, I believe it was 135. to sign with the Braves. He's, you know, 6'4", real wide shoulders, strong lower half, signed at 16. I think he's 17 now. And he's kind of an example of some, you know, some of these pitchers, we talked about before where, you know, everybody, he even pitched at, an MLB showcase, like their big international showcase, if I remember correctly, or actually that might have been their Dominican national showcase, in the Dominican Republic. So, you know, everybody saw this guy pitch, but he's just kind of really, really trended up since then. You know, he's been up to 96. He's got a lot of power to his curveball with pretty good depth and shape to it. Some, you know, some feel for a changeup, erratic strike throwing, but it's not unusual at that age, especially for a taller frame pitcher. But you know, you have a 17-year-old kid with a fastball that's up to 96 and showing feel for his secondary stuff. You know, a lot that can go wrong along the way for a 17-year-old pitcher getting to the major leagues, but it's a pretty good ingredients to be able to build off there.
You know what? I actually remember your Instagram post about him, and I remember him absolutely fooling those hitters with his curveball. Is that an actual potentially plus pitch for him, or is it because he was just so much more overpowering than anyone?
It's definitely got a potential to be at least an average to, you know, maybe potentially above average. It's so hard to say, like, at that, when you're looking at a 16-year-old kid's breaking ball, like, most of the time you're looking at some kind of like a slurvy in between a curveball and a slider type pitch. So you're really, you know, occasionally you see, you know, the Cubs signed a pitcher out of Venezuela, Richard Gallardo, who's, you know, one of the top arms last year. You could see, for example, somebody like him, oh, wow, like, this guy has a hammer breaking ball. Most of the time you're looking at feel for spin and, you know, shape or spin rate sometimes clubs are looking at too with pitchers. So he definitely has that feel to spin on his curveball. There's power with it. You know, I think he was maybe facing some kids at that event who had very, very limited breaking ball or pitch recognition skills. So maybe the hitter reaction made the pitch look a little bit better than it is. But, he definitely has that feel for spin and, you know, to go with that power fastball. It's a pretty intriguing potential starter mix with the pitches that he has.
I think I remember one pitch in particular where he threw a changeup to a righty. It seemed like that batter had never seen a changeup before, and it was very funny to me.
Yeah, I think it looked like he might have torn an ACL or something on the.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right, Ben, one last question before we let you go. Matt has a question about us. We talked a little bit about bloodlines when we were talking about Contreras, and Matt had a question about one player in particular who might be a little bit away from signing with anybody.
So this might even be a little bit beyond your radar for now, but we talked about the 2021-2022 classes. I was covering a game recently in Scranton, and it was one of Vladdy's last AAA games. He mentioned through his interpreter that he has a 12-year-old brother named Vladdy Miguel. I was wondering, he mentioned that he's about the same size as him and that he's a better player than Vladdy Jr. was at the same age. Is he a guy that you know much about and consider a significant prospect at this time, or is he a little further out from your radar?
Yeah, I mean, for kids who are that young, it's hard to really say who's you know, what their potential is. But I've seen some video of him swinging and just running, and it's funny. I mean, you can see obviously, like with Vladdy Jr., some of the same hitting mannerisms that his dad has, and even just kind of like the running game. I mean, Junior does not run at all like Senior did, maybe late career Senior. But it's funny to see his, the next member of the Guerrero family just kind of having those same hitting mannerisms and like running gait, the way he kind of swings his arms. it's kind of funny just to see a little kid who's just kind of obviously has modeled himself after the family, but it's hard to say. But that whole Guerrero family, I mean, there's got to be like five of them now, I think, in pro ball. You got Gregory Guerrero with the Mets, Gabby Guerrero, Josue Guerrero with the White Sox. I think there might be one other too. So it's an impressive bloodlines coming down from the Vladdy Guerrero and obviously Wilton Guerrero too, who's Junior's uncle.
All right, Ben, that is all the questions that we have for you. Feel free to plug anything that you have coming up or anything that you kind of want our listeners to know about before we let you go, man.
Yeah, I mean, we just put out our new top 100 prospects. So if you're a Braves fan, I think we have like 7 or 8 Braves guys on that list, and we're trying to keep that as updated as possible with at least monthly updates throughout the year, just to try to give people more value and just give more value for our subscribers at baseballamerica.com. So obviously all our draft coverage, all of our international coverage, all our prospect coverage is there. So grateful for everybody who does subscribe to baseballamerica.com. So appreciate all the kind words that you guys have said. So we certainly appreciate that too.
Yeah, I just want to say that if anyone is listening to this podcast where you want to listen to an hour of us talk about the Braves minor league system and you are not subscribed to Baseball America, you're doing it wrong. You're absolutely doing it wrong, because a big crux of what we do our best to get out to games, and we do our best to watch the games if we can't get to them live, to kind of give you all a good sense of what the information is out there and who's doing well and who's not. But a big crux of the information we get are from guys like the ones at Baseball America, who do a ton of work. They have a great staff, and they're constantly sending guys out to watch games and constantly getting in touch with scouts. And it's not expensive. I know that there seems to be this aversion to paying for content these days, but I promise you that if you're paying monthly, it's like $14 a month, I think, and you get access to this wealth of information available to you. And honestly, like before I would say to, send support to us, or to do anything, I would say make sure that you support institutions like Baseball America that do things the right way, who don't just give you a surface look at players or give you a list or two every year and that's all they give you. It's constant evolving and constantly being posted content on a wide variant. Well, if you like college baseball, if you like the draft and, amateur baseball, the international market, that's kind of where Ben has sort of taken the reins. But there's just great content on Baseball America throughout it. And it's the easiest money you'll spend. And, it's basically one or two trips to McDonald's that you would make in a month. And instead you get to read all this content, not just from this year, but in previous years too. So I highly recommend that you subscribe to Baseball America. Again, it's the easiest money I spend each month. And I can't recommend these guys enough. They're all great. We've had several of them on the show. This is now Ben's second time talking to us. And we've had JJ, Carlos, all those guys. Just make sure you support them. Thank you again, Ben, for coming on. We really enjoy talking to you as always. And until next time, guys, we'll see you on the road.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.